August 30, 2021, it's Watt from Pedro Show.
Yeah.
for Pedro Show. Happy Monday. Started off something that's coming out in October. They're giving us one piece ahead of time. Impulse. People are putting out live in Seattle, 1965. I love Supreme, and what we heard there was the part four psalm. There's a great live album, Live in Seattle, from this same. I guess he was there five or maybe a week, playing at some place called the Penthouse. And the Hammered Halls after that, Looking After You. And Hammered Halls. Yeah, because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Mark Cisneros with me. Where are you talking to me from, Mark? D.C.?
Yep, Washington, D.C.
Okay, and we got to thank Anthony for the connect. Much respect. Can I ask you to help my memory? Did you play with me in my second band? Did we share a stage near Disneyland? Were you with Kid then?
No, I wasn't with Kid then. I joined shortly after that.
Okay. I thought so. Kiki was on the bass.
That's right. That's right. Keep on bassing.
That's right. And maybe Kid had a couple guys from Seattle in the band or something.
Yeah, that was the guitar player before me, Jesse.
Okay.
Yeah, really great tattoo artist up in Seattle. Great guitar player too, bass player, man.
Everything, okay.
Oh yeah.
Multi, like yourself. Well, let's get into your fucking music journey. Please bring the earliest recollection you got regarding music.
Oh man, it would have to be. An uncle who played guitar and sang, and he was in a covers band, and that was my first. Actually, it was two uncles. One uncle, when I was probably the earliest memory, is an uncle who was living with my grandmother in West Covina, and we'd go over there, and I spent a lot of time with her, and he was like one of the youngest of her kids, and he was living at the house still, and he was playing a guitar there, like an electric guitar. So I'd hear him just kind of jamming in his room. He'd never come out, you know, he'd always just be in there jamming on his guitar. And he was always doing like solos and like working on this and that, which I guess was like, you know, I think he was into like Jimmy Page and stuff like that. And I don't know, he was doing all that. I was amazed by it. But another uncle was in a band. He had a guitar. He just kind of like go through chords, sing a lot of songs, has a great voice. I have an aunt who I didn't know played, and she just like grabbed a guitar. We were somewhere at a family function, and there was an acoustic guitar, and she grabbed it and started playing some chords and started singing some old Mexican songs. And man, it was beautiful. And that blew me away. I was just like, oh man, like she plays guitar. How come we don't all know this? You know
what I mean? Right, right. Big surprise. But this was probably infectious on you. Maybe it got you going. Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, I wasn't. I was not. I didn't have any interest in joining the band at school. I knew some people who did, but I don't know, man. Like at that time I didn't, like, if anything, I would want to play drums in it, but I knew the drummer, or I knew a drummer that was doing it, and all he was playing was the snare drum, and that didn't seem fun for me, and I wasn't into jazz at all, so like, horns and stuff, that wasn't what I would want to do. I mean, looking back now, I kind of wish that I got into jazz and started playing horns and stuff. I was like, man, I kind of wish I was in there learning and getting my reading together and all that, but, you know,
yeah,
is what it is.
Yeah, they say youth is wasted on the young.
That's,
I mean,
right.
You got to live, right, Mark, to find those kind of things out. It's hard to know in advance. What was the first instrument you jumped on?
First instrument, I'd say, was bass. Actually, bass was my first love. We had, like, in my little friend group, we all, once we decided that we wanted to get guitars and play in a band or play in bands and stuff, I got kind of like relegated to being a bass player. I mean, not, you know, kind of same as a little bit as you, you know, And so I was like, okay, like that would be great. You know, like I want to, you know, I'd love to play bass. And there was a pawn shop in Uptown Whittier that I used to go to, and they had this, Gibson, Ripper up on the wall. And man, that was like, I would go in there, and that dude was real nice at the pawn shop, and he would let me like take it down and, you know, like kind of mess around on it, even though I had no idea what I was doing, but he was, you know, he was cool and real patient with me. But as it turns out, my dad worked with a dude who had played guitar, and I had begged my dad for a bass, and that bass in particular. And the dude at his work was like, no, don't get him a guitar. Don't get him a bass. Don't get him a bass. If he could get him a guitar, if he can learn how to play guitar, he can play bass. You know, he'll be better off or whatever. And I was just so, so upset, you know, but, they eventually got me a guitar for Christmas, and that was it. Although in my friend group, I was the last one to get a guitar. So there was a friend's house whose brother played drums. So his drum kit was in the garage. And since I didn't have a guitar yet, I think I got, you know, I was like the default drummer, which is how I started playing drums. So I think maybe, you know, maybe drums might have actually been the first instrument that I had to like actually, you know, put some work into.
Because you never got a shot with the bass, only when you
it wasn't until you know I started working and, you know, got paychecks and was able to buy myself a bass.
Yeah, sure, man.
Which was, you know, later on.
right. Well, fucking to get the drum sets when you're young, that's some bones, costing some bones.
Oh, yeah. It took me a long time to get a drum kit, so I was always, like, using other people's, you know. But I had a guitar. I still have it, the same one. It's like a Washburn 335 copy that I got in the like, I don't know, 1988 or something like that. And
what'd they tell you? If we get you this guitar, you got to take lessons?
No, they just said, they just got it, and they said, you better play it.
You know? You didn't have to get, well, sometimes, right, there's like some kind of condition of getting the
no, kids. thankfully they, my folks were cool about that because they, like I said, some other friends in my friend group, they had already got guitars and they, one of them had started taking lessons. So he was kind of like our canary in the coal mine. So like he would come back with like his little worksheets and stuff from his teacher, and his teacher was like a heavy metal dude, and he was teaching them all this kind of heavy metal stuff, which I was not into. And I was like, well, like that means I'm not going to take any lessons because I don't want to learn how to play all that stuff.
So you, well, you had to learn drums. You couldn't learn the drums from them though.
No, well, at that time my focus was guitar. I mean, drums I was just picking up and I was just listening to records and just kind of like, okay, oh, and like all the classic songs that I grew up with,
George Herbie.
Like I was, George, you know, I'd start to hear different parts of the kit and be like, oh, okay, that's the cymbal. Oh, that's another cymbal, but it has a cymbal on top of it, you know, like the hi-hat, and I'd start actually being able to hear it. So drums I just kind of threw together just out of necessity.
Yeah, I was trying to tell you, George Hurley taught himself by two records, The Who, My Generation,
yeah,
and Stanley, no, Billy Cobham, Spectrum.
That's so perfect because his drumming is like all of that.
That is perfect. And he got some headphones. He got rid of, you know, he's building surfboards in his shed. Fuck that. Got rid of that. Got these headphones and just pounded it into his head, into his body.
Oh, man.
Two records over and over. And he fucking ended up the Minuteman drummer.
He's a damn genius, though, man. You know, like he plays the hell out of those drums.
So, I mean, there's lots of ways. I believe, because I saw it happen. I saw a man teach himself from records. Two records.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, you probably did. Yeah, like you said, you pieced it together with the sounds and this kind of stuff. Here, you gave me some more hammered holes. I'm going to play this.
All right. Speaking now in the written word, speaking sounds I guess you heard.
Show that Chuck music started with Written Words from Hammered Hulls, then Los Skeletons out of South London, Pump Action Pimp, Mold Home and Al Balmore, Best of Heron Run Coyotes, Shugo Tokumaru with Sanganichi, Northern Jaw, St. Cloud, Transatlantic, Plaster Men with Quarantine with You, Bob Bucko Jr., my first bells from Ray Shin. That was the name of a Minuteman comp cassette, too. And then Rights and Production, live at the Black Cat, Hammer and Holes, 2018. Black Cat, Dante.
Yeah, man.
Aaron Cross. And he's drummer man, right? Yeah. Okay, so this band, you know, it's an after-school band, right? Like a garage band, bedroom band.
Oh yeah. It was just a group of friends that would get together, and it became just kind of a rotating cast as everyone was just trying to figure out stuff and be like, oh, like I can play this thing, or, you know, like I learned this Misfit song. Let's try and play it, you know.
Did you guys have a name? Did you ever do gigs, or was it just practice?
Oh no, it was just practice. Yeah. It was all of us just trying to figure it out. And you know, at that point, we all figured that it would take a lot for us to be in bands, you know, and to be a real band, you know, we felt like we had to like really have our shit together. And that took a long time. it took so long that that group just never did anything. You know, we kind of messed around in different configurations over the years, past that, you know, in different things, but yeah, nothing ever came about it.
So what was your first band, your first gig band?
Oh man, first gig band was this band from Torrance. They were older than I was, and I went to high school with the girlfriend of the bass player, and she knew that I had played guitar, and she was like, oh, like, can I hear you play? And I was just like, yeah, yeah. So she came over with some friends and heard me play. And then she was like, she's like, oh, like my boyfriend is looking for a guitar player or whatever. And it's like, you know, do you want to, are you in a band right now? And I was just like, no. But then I ended up, so she put me in contact with them. And then, you know, like I didn't even have a car or nothing. So like the singer who also played guitar, you know, picked me up to go play with them and all that. And they were just basically like a Cure band. You know, like they really loved that band, The Cure. And, you know, I had liked some tunes, and there was my girlfriend in high school at the time was really into The Cure. And I was like, you know, like, yeah, man, okay, that's cool. I can play that stuff. Let's do it. And that was,
Was it actually Cure songs?
No, it was just like their songs that just sounded like The Cure.
Did you dress like The Cure? I met that guy. He was playing Jay Amaskis in ping pong. He was really good at ping pong.
Oh, no shit.
Really quiet, and big, bright red lipstick.
Oh, man, yeah.
Giant hair. But he was very kind to me. He didn't talk to me that much. It was at the Rose Bowl. What were these guys called?
I can't remember what that band was called.
Okay.
Oh, man, I can't even remember. I mean, that was, I mean,
a
yeah.
Bit of Okay,
it was a short-lived thing. But I did go see that show where Dinosaur played with The Cure.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The Rose
Bowl. at the Rose Bowl, man, that was incredible.
I think and I remember had me do a song. I played bass on a Dinosaur song.
No shit.
Yeah, at that gig, one song. Michael Johnson went to the rhythm guitar, I think.
Holy shit, I don't remember that. Oh, man. What year was
the goddamn band's name? I don't blame you. There's so much shit marked that I have fucking spaced and forgotten. Oh, my God. I don't blame you. I'm just curious, you know. But you said that was your first gig band, so your first gig was with this band.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was that like? What was that first gig like?
Oh, man, it was terrifying. It was terrifying. Like, yeah. I had never played in front of people and... You know, it was, they had like all these effects, like effects pedals and stuff. And I didn't even know what the hell effects pedals were. And, you know, I'm just playing, you know, like, Like, I showed up with my little, you know, my little Washburn practice amp, and they were like, oh, yeah, you're gonna need something bigger than that. You know, so, like, I was playing, you know, they had let me borrow an amp, and, you know, I had no effects or nothing. I was just playing right, you know, straight into the amp. And, well, yeah, we're just... It's crazy.
D-Boom was like that. Just turned the treble all the way up.
Yeah, right.
Jay told me he saw us at the channel first time. And it ripped his head out. He had D-Boom at that time had a super twin. It was like 150-watt Fender amp.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Loud guitar amp. 6 tubes. And he said it was like a cheese cutter. Just took the top of his head off.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because he had, was it with a telly through that?
Yeah, no bass, no mid, all treble.
Man, that's a plan
to get the drums. D-Boom said, thought the political thing about the Minutemen was having the drums and bass come up and not letting the guitar dominate. And he you know, listening to R&B and stuff, the brothers did it by treble guitar and playing real, you know, funky clipped. So you made more room for the drums and the bass to fit in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Me and Georgie were in the... So look, how long you last with these guys?
It was just like a few months, I guess. I don't know. I don't even remember if there was there may have been another show somewhere, but I don't know if there actually was.
Well, what you do after that? I mean, you didn't go to higher education for music, right?
No. Well, that didn't come until I was like, oh, like 30. But, yeah, so like I just kind of like after that and playing with those dudes for a little bit. And then after I played with a couple of them, you know, which I still talk to those dudes. I love them so much. But like nothing ever happened until I was just playing at home and, you know, doing this and that. And then a buddy of mine he was the one who had got me into like the Cramps and like a lot of the 60s garage stuff.
Nick Knox.
Oh yeah. My buddy Joey, he actually got the, when they reissued those Back from the Grave comps, he called me up and he was just like, man, you got to come over. And so I went over and we were hanging out and he's playing all this stuff for me. And my mind's just being blown by all these kids in the 60s who were doing this stuff. That was gnarlier than anything that I had ever heard before, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just like, man, he had always talked about starting a band. And I was like, yeah, man, let's start a band. Let's do some garage stuff. So it was just fun. It ended up being like a band that we just hung out and played tunes from Back from the Grave and like Cramps covers and stuff. And eventually we started playing shows and that became a band. And that was called, The Spectres.
The Spectres.
Mm-hmm.
All right. God, I was going to ask, you know, any Recycler bands. Remember?
Oh, man. Recycler.
Recycler bands. Like, oh, man. They always have, must have own transportation, own equipment, no flakes. Call some guy up and say, hey, I ain't got any gear. I don't know how to get to your pad, and I'm a big fucking flake.
Oh man, tell you, pro attitude a must.
Right.
One point where it was like pro hair a must.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, have secured recording deal management. You know, just need a band.
My God.
They don't have a band. They got everything else.
Right. Oh man, for real. That was for us. I mean, that's all of that shit is the reason why I'm out here in D.C. It was. It was like we refer to it as the dark ages of music and being in LA, you know, I mean, we were all like in the, you know, suburbs, but like it was, all that metal shit. It was like really like, that sunset strip metal thing. Like if you picked up,
remember butt rock. It called it butt rock.
Oh, right. Exactly. I mean, do you remember that free, magazine called Bam?
Oh yeah. Bay Area music or something.
Oh man, like just picking up that and like it seemed like all these metal bands would like take out like full page ads of themselves.
Yeah.
And, oh man, it would just be like it was just the worst. It was the worst. I mean, so like I managed to meet some friends from different high schools who were like really, this was like towards the end of, or maybe middle towards the end of high school, who were like the coolest dudes I had ever met. They were like into the coolest music, and they were, you know, are still a huge influence on me. Devin Ocampo, who you played.
Drummer man.
Yeah. And Chad Moulter.
Right. He lived in SoCal for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Totally. So like they were Strong Beach.
Maybe Strong Beach. Devin was telling you, I made a 45.
I know.
Him and his wife, and they wrote one tune. I wrote the other tune. And really nice people. I want to do a whole album with them.
Sure, that'd be great. So, that'd be killer.
But they're DC people, so that's the connect with DC.
Yeah. So Devin grew up in LA,
right?
And he had a band with Chad Moulter and our buddy Darren. Darren played drums, Devin played guitar and sang, and Chad played bass. And they were called Boyd. And that band was ridiculous. They put out a 7-inch. It just did it themselves. I wish that they would do something with that. You know, it's not even like on the internet or anything, but man, it was cool as hell. They were playing all kinds of great shit. And, you know, of course, like, you know, influences were like just mind blowing to me. But they were the ones who like really made me rethink, you know, everything. Like I still, you know, like it's, we refer to it as like the Minutemen School of Music, being like always being prepared, learning how to play your instrument and like learning how to play like to the best of your ability, playing the best with what you got. And they were just, you know, just like no bullshit, like all great shit, all great tunes. They really kind of like enlightened me. But they moved to DC because they were like, everything that was cool that was happening in LA is like been snuffed out by this fucking heavy metal bullshit. So they left and, I followed, but you know, years later, but that's why I'm here.
Yeah. So, you know, music, a lot about music is a lot about people sometimes, you know what I mean? Just making the connect or something. I mean, you got to be motivated yourself, of course.
It's right. Not just absolutely.
Connects and stuff like that. But trippy things come in your life, and big sea changes come.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
You get in the boat and you go fucking across the country.
That's right, man. That's right. And sometimes all you got to do is be willing and brave enough just to like get in the boat. You know.
Yeah. Of course. What do you call it, balls out? Yeah.
You know, right, right.
Pop the chute, throw out the anchor. I'm glad you did it, Mark. But look, at the first hour, August 30, 2021, Dish Wap Pedro Show, special guest Mark Cisneros. Hold tight for hour two. August 30, 2021, it's the second hour of the Wap from Pedro Show.
so many lousy deals. I try to keep it real, but sometimes it's like my heart is in the wrong place. Feels like I'm running in the wrong race. Sometimes I feel like such a waste of space. My dreams are running away, and I'm about to give up the chase.
I'm repeating myself. Start off the second hour with Kid Congo and the Pink Monkey Birds. I Can't Afford Your Shitty Dream House. Ben Salter after that from Tasmania with My Heart Is in the Wrong Place. 11th Freedom. Zach Barocca's New Freedom Sound. And Rice Corps. Lucas Bella. A couple cats from China with Mrs. Rice. Finally, Kid Congo and the Pink Monkey Birds. La Rana. So, how'd you get connected with the kid? Because, he lived for a while in D.C., right?
Yeah, he lived in D.C. for like 9 years or something. In fact, he moved to D.C. the same year I moved to D.C. From New York, because I had lived in New York for a couple years, or about like a year and a half. That's when I actually went to a music school. I went there because I had gotten into jazz, and I was like, I want to play saxophone, I had taught myself, just self-taught with everything else, and I was like, I'll just teach myself how to play that, and I spent like almost a year messing around on a saxophone on the side, and just couldn't do anything, and then I was like, just, reading liner notes and reading books and stuff, it was just like, people would go and find someone, they'd study with someone, or like, yeah, they'd go take a lesson with someone here and there, like just like players that they liked.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, I went and saw a group play and saw the saxophone player, and he was a tenor player, and his name's Louis Van Taylor. He's a LA dude who's played, it turns out he's played with all kinds of people, but he was doing this great stuff, and he was just swinging like, hard as hell, and then he would do like all the stuff that was like, the language and like, bebop stuff, hard bop stuff, but then like he would get free and do this amazing stuff. I was like, man, he's the dude. So I talked to him after the show and asked him if he taught at all, and he was really cool, man. Like, he lived out in Sherman Oaks, and gave me his number, and I would go out there and start taking lessons with him, and man, he was like Obi-Wan Kenobi. He really was, like, he really showed me the way, and it was just, he's like, okay, see this horn you got? This is a student horn. It is not great. Take care of it, because you're going to sell it and you're going to get something better. And he's like, and this mouthpiece, you need to get something different and this and that. And like, he would just tell me, like, he taught me about the whole, about everything. It was really, really incredible.
That's so cool. That's beautiful. I love to hear that stuff. And then, man, what, you get better on the horn? Like, I'm going to take this to New York City?
Well, then I started playing and getting better. And then somebody told me that Art Davis was teaching at a community college in Orange, or what was it, Costa Mesa, maybe? Yeah. OCC. And I was like, oh man, what? And they're like, oh yeah, it's great. Like, he goes and he's like, has this history of jazz course, and he talks about Ascension and all this great shit. And I was like, what? So then I went and I enrolled. And, he was so amazing, and I got to know him. He was, very patient with me, and so kind and generous with his time. And he became a mentor to me. And like, he was like, you should try joining the school band. There's like a community band here. And they take all levels. And, like, I went and I joined up, and the band director was so cool. And, I was just like getting my reading together. Cause I, like I said, I never played an instrument in school, like band or nothing. So I had I was working like shitty jobs, and like on my break, I'd be like writing out, like a staff and like the letters and, the notes on the staff and the spaces, and trying to memorize like the treble clef and bass clef, and like try to, figure out like, learn the rhythms and like quarter notes and eighth notes and all that. So like, I got to play easy parts, and eventually I got better. And I was just like, of course my folks are like, what are you going to do with your life? And I was like, man, maybe I should go to school. Maybe I should like try and do this, like talking to Art Davis, and he was so great. And, was just like, you do what you want to do, and like, study and like work. And like, I know people in New York and, this and that. And, I got this, Downbeat magazine, and I saw that, Steve Lacy was moving back to the States, and I was like, oh man, he was going to go teach in at the New England Conservatory. And then I, for some crazy reason, I thought that maybe I could get into the New England Conservatory and study with Steve Lacy. But then he passed away by the time like I felt like I was good enough to like go, maybe I'd go like audition or whatever.
Damn.
He had passed away.
When he was playing with Thelonious Monk, he wrote down some of the rules that Monk had.
Oh man, classic.
Yeah,
that
you
is,
know what I'm talking about.
Amazing.
That, yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Look,
work worth to live by.
Yeah, absolutely. You gave me this baby Alcatraz in the Aileron. Aileron, sorry.
clouds growing twigs until I please myself again and come back to be like my friend and come back to be like my friend and come back to be like my friend. When you're looking at the road, at the things that you've done, that's 100 miles too long. It seems impossible to do, and you don't want to go through. It seems impossible to do, and you don't want to go on. It seems impossible to do, and you don't want to go through. It seems impossible to do, and you don't want to go on through.
Watch for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with Baby Alcatraz and the Aurelions.
Aurelions.
Aurelions. Aurelions. I get it. Fuck. Sorry, Mark. So,
let's see. That's all right.
Then we had Derek Moneypenny. Yoncala Drain. Yeah, that's a title. Manuel Armida. This is a Mexico City guy who lives way up in Yellowknife, Northwest Territory, Canada. And beautiful stuff. Manuel Armida for Water. And Bon Bon, this has got my Mrs. Man drummer's wife, Penaloma, on bass. And Chicanista. Chicanista. They started it with an X, so kind of threw me. But I fuck up everybody's language accidentally, though. Never on purpose. Benji Faree.
Faree, yeah.
With Humidity. So. Wide variety of stuff you sent me. Really interesting.
Yeah, man. I've been I've just been real fortunate to be able to, you know, be asked to join in on a lot of different stuff. And
well, let's get caught up with your little journey there. Okay, you missed Mr. Lacey, but you're still out there anyway.
So Art Davis told me about the New School. And that I should consider that.
Yeah.
And that you knew Reggie Workman over there.
Yeah.
And so then I sent in some stuff. And I had, like, recorded some tunes and, you know, gave them to Dr. Davis. And he was just like, yeah, when you send stuff in, send them your original tunes. You know, like, this will really help you. And actually, you played one of those tunes on your show in, Shoot, I don't know what year that was. 2000.
Well, I've been doing the show for 20 years and 3 months.
Yeah. So maybe 2001 or something, too.
That's the first year. Wow. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and it was just me playing, you know, playing like drums and upright and piano and tenor. But yeah, so I got accepted into the New School and I went and, yeah, that was, you know, it was crazy. It was amazing because, like, the, you know, professors there were all, like, legendary players, you know, like insane. Like, Chico Hamilton was there.
That guy was a big influence on Georgie.
Oh, man.
I didn't see him do the headphone thing, but he liked Chico a lot, yeah. And Chico said, you know, he had trouble getting songwriting creds. Drummers can't write songs. Fucking bullshit.
Oh, man. Yeah, and he eventually had to, like, start his own thing, like, like production house and everything and for publishing.
There was a guy who lived here in Pedro, Hungarian guitarist, Gabor Szabo.
Oh, yeah. Oof.
Yeah. Died young, but tragic. But great player. Chico, he's a force. He's a force. Georgie loved him. So he wasn't as, like, Billy and Keith Moon with that intense, you know, I'm going to beat this shit into my body. but you just love this thing. You know, there's something about the Latin thing that goes good with drums. Just does.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The, I mean, those patterns and everything that Hurley would play.
A lot of that stuff, you know, and I got to say on the bass guitar, too, man. What moves better than fucking Latin bass line? God damn.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
Right?
Like, ka-chow.
I was going to just say, ka-chow, what a force. Well,
yeah, he was Art Davis's dude.
Yeah.
He would talk about ka-chow and be like, man, like that's where it's at.
And Reggie Workman, we lost Dr. Art Davis, but Reggie's still around, right?
Oh yeah, he's still doing it, man. He's still playing. Yeah, I saw him do a live stream during the lockdown. Man, he sounds killer.
That's so fucking happening. I love to hear that stuff. But keep on keeping on, you know, if you're blessed with the years and not putting them to waste. Beautiful man. He's on the giant steps and stuff. We're at the end of the second hour, August 30, 2021, Dish Watt Pedro Show, special guest Mark Cisneros. Hold tight for hour three. August 30, 2021, it's third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
You and have a 100 drum with smooth and a fashion as a president, but the soul will never rise again.
Pedro show start off the third hour. Low Ways Octet, a shortwave commune. Loopy smiles, Lupe. And then Samuel Locke Ward, Piss Test. The South will never rise again from Desdemonas. Desdemonas, I saw a picture of you rocking a bass.
I play guitar in Desdemonas, okay. But.
I saw you rocking a white Thunder, non-reverse Thunderbird. You know, I got a blue one. I did my first.
I know. Bluey? Is that the name?
That's its name. And, I'm starting to record with it again, but for gigs, it's just too big. It makes my hands can't handle it. But
oh man, it's giant. Those things are giant.
Yeah, the headstock's like 9 inches. So okay. So you go through all the school and thing. That's so bitching, too, you know, what you did that way. And you make your way to D.C.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I only lasted a year at the new school because when I would walk down the practice, you know, the hallways where the practice rooms were, there were all these kids that were, like, right out of high school. And, like, mind you, I was, like, already, like, 30.
Yeah, right.
And, like, there were these kids right out of high school just shredding on every instrument they played. It was like, I was like, you guys don't even need to be at school. You should be out making records and playing and, you know, this and that. And so at that time, it's expensive to live in New York, and that school, you know, was expensive. And I got a call from, you know, I kept in touch with Devin and Chad, and Devin had called me up and the band that they were playing in, that they had down here at the time called Medications. They were parting ways with their drummer. And he was like, man, come down to D.C., let's play. And I was like, I'm there.
Whoa. Was there a drum set waiting for you? Well, Devin.
Well, Devin has drums.
Yeah.
Devin's,
well,
Devin's
plays
a
everything,
drummer
right?
himself.
Right, he's a one-man band. Fuck.
He's a goddamn genius, man.
Yeah, it's incredible. So it was all laid out for you. Oh, that's so bitching. That was beautiful of him.
So that's how I met, you know, I came down here, and then, you know, he's introducing me to, like, all the D.C. cats, and I was like, oh, man, like, what?
Ian, is this what the chain in the gang?
That happened after, I know all these guys because of Devin and Chad when I moved down here.
Okay.
You know, because they had already put records out on Discord, so, like, you know, I get here, and it's just like, holy shit. So then I started playing, and then people, you know, dug what I was doing, and, you know, I started getting asked to be, you know, to play in other projects, And that's how the kid thing happened. Okay. You know.
Sure, sure. I'm gonna play Chain in the Gang though. That's the makeup guy, right?
Oh yeah.
I was walking down the street when I saw a helicopter flying over me and a guy getting hung from it by his feet. He got dropped down and he hit the ground. So I went over to see if there's something I could do for him. He said, "It's too late for me, I guess, but there's something I'd like to get off my chest. Would you please listen?" I had to say yes. And this is what he said. Killed JFK on a sunny day with some other guys you still see hanging around. I was on a grassy knoll dressed like a hobo with some other guys dressed like a clown. I said, "Wow, is that true?" He just turned blue and this is what he said. He said, "It's my time, I've got to go. Let this be a lesson. This is my get back confession. Yeah. It's my time, I've got to go. Let this be a lesson. This is my confession." So I took a walk by the seashore to look at the waves. As I looked out, I saw a submarine surface, a guy on the deck get thrown into the ocean. He tried to swim ashore. He almost made it, but then he got badly mauled by sharks. He crawled onto the sand. I tried to give him a hand, but he said, "No, it's too late for me, but there's something I'd like to say. I killed MLK for the CIA and Malcolm X for Federal Express. Bobby Hutton, George Jackson, Fred Hampton, yeah, and all the rest." He said, "Time, I've got to go. Let this be a lesson. This is my deathbed confession. Yeah. I kept walking. Tried to walk fast. I walked by some fast food establishment and I looked inside. There was a distinguished looking guy and we made eye contact and he started choking on his french fries, crawled out on the pavement gasping for life. Yeah, and he started to die. I tried to give him CPR but he said, "It's too late for me, but I got something I want to get off my chest." I said, "I'm no priest." He said, "Boy, make this easy on me." He said, "I faked the moon landing. I saved Hitler's brain. It's in Argentina, but it controls the USA. I fixed the Pope's election. I did the October surprise. I am the French Connection. I've got Ray Charles' eyes. The Gulf of Tonkin, I got Saddam to invade. I planned the Bay of Pigs. I put Lumumba in his grave. Oh yeah, it's my time, I've got to go. Let this be a lesson. This is my death and confession. Come on now. It's my time, I've got to go. Let this be a lesson.
Joaquin Pedro, last music for this edition. Deathbed Confession, Chain in the Gang. We're talking off air about Ian and his quick wit. Then Brett Goodsight with brand new from him out of Milwaukee, 8BHM2. That's a title. And then Yoko Ono, Rich Morrell mix of Walking on Thin Ice. I got to play a song at a gig with her and Ig.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Nels Klein was on the guitar. It was at the Odeon downtown L.A.
And holy shit.
Yuko Araki on drums.
And damn.
Take the D train or something. And I had just hurt my knee, but fuck it. I was in an immobilizer and shit. I don't know how that was going to stop.
Oh. Oof.
And she's very few words, but very nice. Very nice to meet
you. Oh, that's so cool. Man, I used to go check out Nels when he was doing that Alligator Lounge thing.
Yep.
New Music Mondays?
Right. West Los Angeles. Near the old Music Machine.
Yeah. I seen you play there with him, too.
Yeah. I've done a bunch of gigs there with him. In fact, one was... I haven't run away from many gigs, but there was one. I could see my truck across the street. And then these guys were nice guys and everything, but they were just making a butt. You know, free stuff has to still, it's a big difference when you play with somebody like Nels, and then guys are just jacking off. And I felt like they were abusing the audience, so I ran. It wasn't my amp or anything up there anyway, and I just unplugged and ran straight to the truck. Bad. Oh, man. So, right during all this stuff, were you trading files?
Not much, actually. A little bit towards the end, it started happening more and more. But like for the bulk of it and the whole front end, nothing at all, man.
Okay.
I wasn't doing anything. I was just kind of in survival mode and not feeling very creative at all.
Yeah, you gotta have the spirit, or just a buttload of discipline. Just keep pushing yourself.
I know, man.
I just kind of got into it, but I was wondering, because you're talking about your composing, how big a part? Because on one side you're like a session guy, right? But I like this idea because I think life is about taking turns. So why always be a side man? Oh, why always be a composer? Why not play different roles? That's what I've gotten to do with guitar, you know. Sometimes take direction, sometimes give direction, sometimes collaborate, all them kind of things. So how big is composition now in your music?
How big is what?
Composition, you know. You write,
man, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, it's, you know, I think like every project that I get asked to join in on is something where it's a lot of it is me, you know, writing something for it, like writing parts, you know, coming up with something, because it's like, it's more than just like, hey, we need someone to play this part. You know, it's like we like what you bring. And so we're going to bring you in to like do your thing. And, you know, and of course I take direction. I'm, you know, And I love to, but it's a thing where it's like most of the time people are like, do your thing, come up with something, come up with a cool part, you know.
It's not so much like, hey, we need you to replace the dead guy.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, good music is good music, and people die, and people have to be replaced, but that's not the only way to be a band. Right. So you get into situations where the... They've got like little springboards, little launch pads for your.
I love that. That's great. But of course, you know, like there are situations where it's just like, we need this thing. It's got to be played exactly
right.
You know, I got, you know, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Like with that, when I played with Ig and Yoko Ono, I didn't create a part. I played.
Right. Exactly.
I kind of did it a lot way, but. And with Stooges, right? I didn't, hey guys, I'm throwing in some new notes.
Man.
They let me every time do LA Blues, I got to put in some quotes from Love Supreme in there.
Oh, yeah.
They did that. Yeah, that was really nice of them. In fact, Scotty and Brother Steve would like join in on me as it was walking off, you know, with the arms up. I am you.
Oh,
I
man.
Am you. And bum, 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 bum.
Our
gigs. All right,
meet those guys. Oh man.
Are gigs coming back for you?
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, all of a sudden things are happening. Okay. It went from zero to now I'm getting scheduling conflicts and shit. It's crazy. Whoa. But I'm thankful, man. I'm thankful. Yeah, I'm really, sure. really happy things are coming together. And I mean, even like today, I gotta go practice with the Scream guys for a thing that they got cooking. And then after that, it's up at Inner Ear finishing up that Hammered Holes LP.
They were out in Cali for a while, right? They were called Wool.
Who?
The two brothers.
Yeah, they're still out there.
They are. Okay, because Grohl was telling me some stuff.
Yeah, they're out there now. They're just in town to do this record, and it's going to be a new Scream record. They're recording it at Inner Ear. They're trying to get it in before Inner Ear closes, because Inner Ear is closing in October.
Whoa. Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, man, it's sad, but you know.
What about you? Are you recording at home, Annie?
What's that?
Do you do any of your recording at your pad?
Oh yeah. I got a practice space too, and I've been doing a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. Well, is there a Mark Cisneros album coming?
That's kind of the Hammett Hall stuff. That's like the Hammett Hall stuff is like there's songs that I've had since high school in that.
Well, when you get the album, will you come back on the show? Because we're out of fucking time now, but I could talk to you forever, Mark.
Yeah, man, absolutely. That'd be my pleasure.
So when you get that thing done, bring on the show, play it all, and talk about the tunes.
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
Big
absolutely.
Inspiration, man. You make me love music even more than I already do. Thank you, Mark.
Well, you know what? I mean, you've been a huge inspiration to me, and I think it's just... It's one of those things where you see someone do it, and then you get inspired, and then you do it yourself, and then you hope that you can be a part of this cycle where you're going to help somebody else, you know, see the light and go, and they're going to help somebody else, and you know, keep it moved down the line, you know.
I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Truly, keep on keeping on, brother. It's been August 30, 2021 edition of WAP Pedo Show. People, keep your powder dry.